So I've never done, I don't think, my history of giving shmoozes. I'm doing this shmooze for two reasons. And I really have to thank my neighbor, Yudi Axelrod, who referenced this piece to me. He told me to listen to the Shir of Soloveitchik on Bavloska. He said to me how emotional he gets listening to it. I don't know if I was emotional like that, but certainly it was a very powerful piece. Usually, I rarely will ever just quote and not really add in my own. I'll still add my own examples, but my own two cents. But Soloveitchik has an unbelievable idea about the role of leadership based in Baloska. And he starts with a question. He says, there's so many stories we have in this week's parsha, Baloska, and they seem to be very disjointed from each other. First, we jump out there with Menorah. I'm using David Levy's Chumash, so I'm reading the art scroll little highlights on the side. That's what I'm getting from right now. We have Menorah. We have the consecration of the Levites. David Levy. Apprenticeship and responsibility. We have the idea of people who are obligated to be together and to who to help out, who to pitch in. We have the only Pesach offering ever given in the desert. It's the second year. The first year we were already with some Mitzrayim. It's the second year, the first time we ever did it. And the only time we ever did it, the next 39 years, was this one. We never did it again in the desert. 39 years we missed it for. Pesach offering, how is that relevant to the part we had beforehand? Pesach Sheni, that makes sense. Pesach, yeah, Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni was about, anyone know what Pesach Sheni was about? Good, so people who were Tameh, who were not able to bring the Korban, and they wanted to lose out. Lama Nigarah, it's a beautiful idea. Why should I lose out? You're not giving me a chance to do mitzvah? Maybe people view mitzvah as being an obligation. You kidding me? An opportunity. An opportunity, not an obligation, it's an opportunity. And yet, we have this idea over here that, again, that we have Pesach Sheni. So that's because Chazal viewed it as being an opportunity, not an obligation. Then we have the signs of the Israelites' travel, which means we had the idea of the chatzotros, we had the trumpets that were blown in order to know when you're leaving, when you're staying. All these seemingly disjointed pieces to each other. We had the order of how you settle, how you break camp. Moshe then invites Yisrael. Again, this all sound like little soap opera pieces going on at similar times, but there's no flow here. It's just like moment, 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 moment. Moshe invites Yisrael to join the nation. We then have the famous backward nuns. Everyone knows that the Yidmitz are the famous backward nuns. And if you look at Chazal, they say, what are the nuns there for? They don't belong there. This piece did not belong where it is. It was put there to separate between Peronos and Peronos. We had bad things that happened before, bad things that happened next. The next one we see very clear what the bad things are there. People started to complain. But the first thing before is not clear what the bad news is. There's a beautiful idea. Rashi and I quoted last time about a Tinok, Brech, Bebet, Sefer. I'm not getting into it right now. But the entire passages following each other seem to be not a great flow. And the Rishon goes on to explain, I'll read more, not being happy with the man, Moshe is despairing. So then you can ask, why did Moshe despair over here more than he did by the Egel Azov? The Egel Azov, he was very upset, but he took care of business. But here, he gives up. He says, Hashem, what do you want me to do anymore? Anu Cheresi, Esko Amazet, did I bear them? Are they my children? Literally, not my children? You want to tell me? I can't carry them anymore. You want me to carry them like an Omein carries her yonek, like a nursing woman carries a baby she's nursing? I can't. Now, by Yekosov, he didn't say that. Yekosov, he the opposite. He defended them. Why is Moshe all of a sudden fed up till here? What happened? What was so bad? They wanted more food? That's worse than the Yekosov. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu? I'm done. That's it. We have the story of the Sanhedrin and Hashem responding and giving them what they wanted. Story of these prophets and we have Eldad and Medad who are in the camp prophesizing. We have the quail that came down in the end and people were dying left and right because they ate from it. There's a lot going on right now. Moshe Rabbeinu is questioned by Miriam and Aaron. Lashon Hara, she becomes Mitzorah, Mitzoras. Fine. A lot of discussions. Basically, ask the following question, so that he wants to understand, is this one story? Is it many stories? If it's many stories, then how do we understand the flow of the stories? A lot of things are on his mind. So he has a tremendous chiddush. And he says, we'll take a step back for a second. The entire purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim, he says, Chazal tell us, was to serve Hashem al har hazeh. We're not some chained nation that God says, let me take out from Mitzrayim because, you know what, I just like you to have a break from your work. God did not redeem us Just because he felt bad, he watched a movie, he saw you know, an ad out there, save the Jewish people, you know, save the whales. I'm a passionate person, let me just save everything I can. Remember when I was, there was a movie out called Bruce Almighty. Anyone ever seen it before? Yeah. So it was a scene, and I actually used this last year, I showed a scene actually to the Torah Chiraga. A scene there where Bruce Almighty, so he was basically the role of God now. And he had all these questions, people were asking all these things, and he just said to them, just yes. And he just responded yes to everybody. Right? It just felt bad enough. It's only going to pain. Yes, 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 yes. Copy, paste. Check the box for all yes. And the world became chaotic. God did not see complaints and crying. He says, okay, just, you know what? He had a reason behind it. He said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you'll know that you'll succeed in your mission when you take it out of Mitzrayim, and it will be completed only when you go to serve me in this mountain. And there were two parts to that service. Part number one was you receive the Torah. You receive the laws. Then you leave Mitzrayim for a reason of no longer being a slave nation. You could take out of Mitzrayim, we would have been free. We're not slaves, but we'd still be slaves. For you to be a non-slave, a free nation, an Am Chavshi, Chayrut, it requires Luchos, it requires the Torah, and requires basically Mikdash, the Mishkan, the service of God. Then you're no longer slaves, then you're free. And until that happened, we were on a journey to get to that stage. Without the egos of happening, it would have been 80 days quicker, Rav Soloveitchik says. What does that mean? Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, egos of happens. He has to go up two separate times, 40 days of davening, forgive them, before he gets the next separate Torah again. And it took 80 more days, but that was all the Eagles of did. It threw them back 80 days on their journey. And finally, when it's finished, and the B'nai Israel is figuring again, we get the Torah properly, Moshe has the Luchos in hand, and now all that's left is our journey, is our Mishkan, our Mikdash, and once it's built, we're ready to go. We're ready to go right into Israel. Unbelievable. And that was finished. Mishkan was finished Rosh Chodesh Nisan. About to get to right now. Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This Parsha. The Mishkan was finished. The Levim. Last Parsha we had in Parsha Nasa, we had all the, each day, a different Nasi gave for his Shevet. And we're now finished. We had 12, now with 13th inauguration, everything is done. On the 13th day of Nisan, we should have left. We have the Torah in our hands. The Mishkan is in our hands. We've inaugurated the Mishkan. The Nesim already did it. But it's Erev Pesach. So we can't go yet. You know what happens now? Story of Erev Pesach. We have the first and only Korban Pesach in the Midbar, Rav Soloveitchik says. And that was done so that when we finish, we would now be on a journey, on the final walk, to get to Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu will be the one who leads them in the end. And sure enough, we have people who said, well, we're Tamei, we want to be more involved in it, we don't want to give up, I want more mitzvahs. What a beautiful idea. And Hashem gave them Pesach Sheni, which we actually had a few, you know, a little while ago, and Rabbi Haber brought matzahs, and we ate them. It's beautiful. Great. And we're right now at the peak of our existence. Moshe Rabbeinu, as our leader, about to head into Eretz Yisrael. We're walking there, and we're going to get there quickly. Very quickly. And you know, we have to know them, we have to know the chatzotros, we have to know how to encamp where everyone belongs, blow the chauffeurs, we got to train you how to make these walks. It's like going through what we had yesterday, we had a drill. What happens when you hear a siren, where do you go? We're having drills now. Training drills to get to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu could not be more happy. So they actually said, he pointed out, I want to show it to you inside, just like I hope I can find it for you. I didn't look at it. I'm thinking in advance, but Kadosh Baruch Hu, right now, Moshe Rabbeinu is about to get to the stage when he's going to take us into Eretz Yisrael himself. He's going to be the one to take us in, and this is the pinnacle of his career right now. If I can read it for you. Oh, okay. First, he goes to Yisrael. What's he doing, Yisrael? What's he doing? Yisrael, he's saying Yisrael not only as a father-in-law, son-in-law, father-in-law, but Rosh points out and says that he's going, representing Klal Yisrael, to the nations of the world. You're about to witness an event where the Jewish people are on top of the world forever. Come join us. You have a chance to join us if you want to. He's telling his father, but he represents all Gerim in the world. You want to be part of this relationship to us and God, mankind and God? Come with me. We're about to get to it. And Rosh whenever he read this, he would start to cry. He would cry. Why? Look how Moshe's talking. Let's read the words with you inside. Telech imanu. Sorry, I'll go back for a second. Moshe lechovev ben Reuel hamijani Chosein Moshe, his father-in-law. Chosein is a father-in-law, son-in-law, good kash. Here it means father-in-law, right? No, sima nachnu. Listen to the light with Moshe, what he's talking. He says, Dad, Tati, Abba, Zaini. What he calls his father-in-law. No, sim anachnu el makom asher mar Hashem oto etein lachem. We, me included, are now going to Israel where God promised He would give us. He would give them, and I'm part of them. L'chaitam, come with us. Moshe Rabbeinu is about to realize his dream. Could you imagine how excited he must be right now? Could you imagine this is the moment he's been waiting for since he ran away from Mitzrayim as a prince of Egypt? To take out this nation, to erase the servitude, and to realize the dream that was promised to the forefathers. And he's telling you so, he must be beaming. Come join us. This is awesome. We're about to do it. L'choytanu ve'tav nulach. We'll be good to you. Ki Hashem diber tov al Yisrael. We got it. It's in the bag. We're heading over. And Yisrael says, I'm not going. I'm going back home. Moshe says back, please don't go back. Don't leave us. And they go on. If you come with us, all good will happen to you. Good to you as us and good to you as well. And in the end, Yisrael doesn't join them. But it's okay. Because we're going anyways without him. Vayisu mehar Hashem derech Hashemim. We go 3 days. And the Arab Bersh Hashem, the Salef Nehem derech Hashemim. Again, Kor Rashi was even a piece of derech. It really, in the end, it only was 1 day. It took him 1 day. On the cusp. And then comes Vayivin saw Aaron. You know how it's going to be? It's going to be Anan in front of them. We're going to travel. There's going to be a pillar of fire. There's going to be clouds. And the Aaron will lead you. And this is the perfect spot for this B'nai 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 Aaron to be in. Because we're about to walk in. It's just a matter of moments. And it's automatic. And Moshe Rabbeinu is, his wishes are about to come true. And then all heck breaks loose. What happens? The very next pasuk, the nation starts to complain. There's not some stomp complaints. We call it taiva. It was a complaint that was based upon desire. This changed the course of history. They sort of let the desire get the best of them, and in the end, Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer fit to be the leader for them anymore. He was no longer fit. He couldn't bring them into Israel anymore. But the Egel Zav, he got past that. You know why? Because the Egel Zav was based on fear. They were afraid. Moshe Rabbeinu, they had a vision of Moshe Rabbeinu, his body going to Shemayim. They were afraid of what's going to be next. And you can make a mistake when you're afraid of something. And Chazal suggests that what happened to Egel Zav, what happened, was that they just wanted some sort of a conduit, some sort of a medium in order to be inspired. And they were afraid. They couldn't look God in the face. They needed a go-between. And the ego was supposed to be that it was really a means to serve God properly. It was wrong. And they made a big mistake, but it was a fearful action. But taiva? Desire? You let that rule your life? Forget it. The entire Aaron, the whole Vayin, even so Aaron, that was supposed to be the beginning of the next step of life. The Melech HaShiach Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to bring us into Eretz Yisrael, it would be a different world today. We had taiva. We had wants, we had desires, and we even said, the mun? Ach, feh, I don't want the mun. Just give me something good. The mun represents everything about religion that we care about. It represented being satisfied with what you get. God will take care of you. He drops on your front lawn every single day what you need. There's nothing left over. Whatever you need, just take what you need. God will give you the next day. It's the ultimate sign of emunah. Taiva, I need more. Remember, something he called it a limitless desire. I have a limitless desire for more. I can't be satisfied with that. It's not enough for me. I can't just have my cabinets bare knowing that God one day will give me tomorrow. I can't have that. I have taiva. I have wants. When that happened, everything changes. We started to live a pagan way of life. What does it mean? It means that we stop trusting in God. We stop relying on God. We want things. We want more. I want more. It's completely antithetical to religion. To Judaism, it is. It brings out the worst in man. Almost every single war that's ever happened in history, because someone wants more. I want this, I want that. Almost every case of fighting among people, because someone wants this, because I'm so glad why you spoke to me. It's all about the ego of wanting to be on top. That's a pagan lifestyle, Rosh Hashanah says. It's pagan. And when that happened, Moshe Rabbeinu, he realized that his dream would never be seen anymore. It was over for him. He hoped. He still hoped one day, maybe, but now he knew it was never going to happen. He compares it, Rosh Hashanah compares it to when his wife got sick. That there's always hope. And there was some point in time he just knew she'd never get better. She was going to die. The feeling Moshe Rabbeinu had at that point in time, when he knew it was over, he gave up. You know why this action was so hard for Moshe Rabbeinu? You know why he said, I give up already? What do you look at me for? I can't take them. I didn't bear them. I give up already. It's because Moshe Rabbeinu knew that this was a point when he couldn't solve. Up to now, he'd been their teacher. He'd been their Rebbe, and he thought that was enough. To be their Rebbe, to be their teacher, to guide them in life. But once, and you know what? When he was gone and they were afraid, okay, I get it. But this I don't get. I don't get. How could you pass up the opportunity to be with God? For what? For quail? For flesh? For meat? For a momentary pleasure? How could you ever make decisions in life that are based on the here and now, passing up the future? Why would you ever want to do that? And he realized at that point in time that this would never work anymore. It wasn't going to work. You know, so Leitcher compares it to when he realized his wife is not going to live through the year. When he realized it's going to happen, the feeling of like despair. Moshe Rabbeinu despairs. How down and sad he is. This was it. Like he was right on the cusp. If you're mad at any sport fan, there's so many stories of this where we just had in the Super Bowl this past year where it's momish like it's over. Like it's just you're on the cusp. Just don't mess it up. You can taste it. And then just like, it slipped right through. He missed it. He lost it. And now he's just, that's it. Like, now what? And he can't bear it. He can't take it anymore. And the entire history changes. Moshe Rabbeinu now says, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, you're right. Your role changed now. You're no longer the Rabbeinu only. Your obligation now is much more than that. You have to be a carrier. You have to carry them like a mother would carry a child. It's not about only teaching them right now. You have to be there for them. You have to support them. You're now the new mother of Bnei Yisrael. You're the mother of them. And as a mother for Bnei Yisrael right now, you don't have a family. Everyone's your family. And right, what is he right away? He divorces his wife. He leaves his wife. Why? Because it's not your wife anymore. Because that's too personal. As the new person you're going to be now, this is Rav Soloveitchik, you don't have the right as a leader of Klal Yisrael. You don't have a life anymore. Your life is everyone's life. Moshe Rabbeinu's children are barely mentioned anymore. They're never mentioned. You know why? Because you don't have children anymore. Everyone's your child. That became Moshe Rabbeinu's new reality. And to Soloveitchik, that's exactly why Moshe separated from his wife and from his kids, really, in some ways. He left his wife and kids behind. Not behind, but together with everyone else. No special treatments anymore. They're part of the rest of the nation, and I'm in charge of the rest of the nation. Not only a Rebbe, not to be your mother. I have to carry you. Hashem says you must carry them now. Like an omein carries the onek, like a wet nurse or a mother would carry the child that's suckling from her. It's your new role. Moshe knew this would never take him to Eretz Yisrael, but it's a new role he had to take. So he left his wife. Now Miriam and Aaron don't understand. They don't understand. What? Left your wife? We also are Nevi'im. We're also prophets. We're also leaders like that. Hashem had to respond to them, no, you don't understand. Moshe Rabbeinu is different now. The rules are different. The roles were different. And now things have changed. And he gave Miriam and he gave Miriam Tsaras for talking bad about Moshe Rabbeinu because she was talking in the past tense before the backward nuns came up. Because before they came up, it should have been, but even so, we go right into it. But we messed it up. Klal Yisrael messed it up because we had time and we had desire. That's a salvation's piece. That's an explanation of what the parsha did. But I wanted to take two things out of this for us. Two small things. Remember what it means to be a leader. Be a leader. Be a leader means, and sometimes maybe a leader in your community. Some of you could be leaders in school systems. Who knows? Trust me, the last place I thought I would be, and when I was in your seat at your age, was this. The last thing I thought. And frankly, I'm the luckiest person in the world. I'm so lucky. speak to Jamie, just to speak to Jamie about this topic, and I'll get more into it as the next week comes by. The opportunity to spend a year with you, to be able to sit and grow and learn, it's something that the reason why I'll get emotional later on is because I'm the luckiest guy in the world to be able to help shape somewhat, hopefully, people's lives in a way that makes their lives more meaningful. It's the biggest treat in the world. There's one downfall with that, is that the family takes a hit sometimes. Your kids need something, you know, your wife needs something, and I have, let's say I have 20 students who need something also, 20 children. So Rosh Hashanah says, as a person who's helping someone in a time of difficulty, so then you don't have the right to focus on your kids. You don't. You're not allowed to. Rabbi Akiva Eger, I told you last week, his parents couldn't keep them anymore. They weren't allowed to keep him. He was the Jewish people's. He had to become a goon. He wasn't allowed to be just their son. Little Kivi. Kivi's gone. Now it's Rabbi Akiva Eger. They don't have the right to hold their son back like that. Any person in the leadership position has the obligation and responsibility to take care of everyone around them. That's their role. And you have a different role. Your role is to let that happen. You cannot let taiva get in the way of what the purpose of the world is. God did not take you out of Mitzrayim so you could stop and be. That's not what you're here for. You might as well be not alive anymore if that was the case. He took you for two reasons. So you have a Torah and you have Avodas Hashem. That's it. Can you involve in your life things besides Torah and Avodah? Yeah, of course you can. But to sacrifice your Torah and Avodah for a taiva? For an attitude that's so anti-religion. I don't want man. I don't want God to rely on you. I want food. I want plenty. I want to have heaps and heaps of God. Heaps and heaps. Going to happen in the end? We die from it. That's not what a Jew is. It should have been a cakewalk for Moshe Rabbeinu, but he just finished telling Yisro's father, Dad, you got to come. We're about to change history. They would have crowned him as a Melech Mashiach. And it was written in the Torah already. It was written in the Torah. It happened. But the next pasuk was the nation complained we had to put backward nuns because it doesn't belong anymore. Because the Torah cannot be with that anymore. It's over. You think you can live your life of Torah in a way where you just Torah and Taiva come together as one? It doesn't work that way. You'll have in your history, as you go to Shemayim 120 years, you'll have your senior in history, there'll be a backward nuns around this year. Doesn't belong. You don't deserve it. Because you let it get away from you. You can't, it doesn't coexist. It can't. So you have two choices in life. And so do I. You can say to God, I don't want to carry the burden. I don't want to. I'm not interested in it. I want my family back. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the right to do that. He didn't have the right to. He became more than just Rabbeinu. He became more than just a Rebbe. He became a father for everyone. That was his obligation at that point in time. And he gave everyone up for it. He gave his wife up for it. Kids up for it. Everything up for it. No one's Moshe Rabbeinu. But you are people who are being shepherded by Moshe Rabbeinu's teachings. The opportunity of a lifetime is to say, I'm in. I'm all in. I want to take out of Mitzrayim, not just so I can be free as a human being. Because I want what it means to be free in God's eyes, which is to be serving of God. It's the greatest gift mankind was given is the Torah. Could you imagine God gave you his diary because he wants you to read it and get close to him? And for a second that you let your taiva get in the way of that? For a pleasure that takes a moment and then it's done, then you can't have the Torah. You can't have it. But even so, it doesn't belong by you anymore. I'll get back to details, you know, next week. But just to end off, you had a year. You've had a year. We've had the opportunity to taste what it means to be in Soa Aron, to travel with Torah. I don't mean traveling the country. I mean traveling in your life, to the experience in life where you've traveled, you've journeyed. Some of you have stopped for longer periods than other people have. Some of you have maybe traveled more. But every single person has traveled. But like it or not, it's in your books. It's in your file right now. It's in your file. It'll always be there. It'll never go away. But what you can do is you can put a backward note in front and say, this doesn't belong by me right now. Taiva is my thing. I'm into Taiva. It's my thing. I want more. I don't want to rest in that. I want more. I want more money. I want more food. I want more cars. I want a bigger house. I want more. You can have that also. And you just take your hand and you'll just go to Shemayim. You'll write a backwards nun around this beginning of this year, a backwards nun around the end of the year, and then go about your life because that's where it belongs. That means that you just pay passed on the greatest gift in the world. The gift of being among God's nation that was supposed to go into Israel for the year. For life. Give both you and me a bracha. Both of us need this bracha. Myself, maybe more than you. You should have the strength to be able to understand what it means to be, just have the wisdom, how fortunate and how lucky you are to be among the people that God chose. And to look from a salvation perspective, how the parsha plays that out, how following your taivas are so dangerous to the ultimate plan of God. We should be zocha to be the Moshe Rabbeinu before the backward nun, of the excitement of Klal Yisrael about to enter Eretz Yisrael, not like the one afterwards complaining for only wanting more.